Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And hello again, John Jeffers here with the Jeffers Brief on Contra Radio Network on KYAH 5. That's 40 on your AM dial. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Glad you're here. We've got a lot to get to today for this week. Thought I'd get it in here before the State of the Union address. So what I would like to do, if possible, if we might be able to do that. Let me see something here real quick. Yes. We are going to do that. Okay. One of the things I want you to know is that I'm asking for $2 a month. $2 a month. Go to ContraRadioNetwork.podbean.com. Let's do it. I've been doing it for 5 years, people. I'm not going anywhere. Not a flash in the pan. And if you do listen to Contra Radio Network on Podbean, I can tell you this. You're going to get three or four extra shows, other than mine. So please, $2 a month is nothing for this, really. What do you think? Good idea? Yeah? Yes. I agree. Yes. Oh, more? Okay, more it is. Yes, all right. Good enough. All right, let's get on with it here. Many, many things to talk about. Very little time. Where do we start? Okay, if you haven't noticed, if you don't know, if you own stock, if you have a pension plan, chances are your pension plan is invested in the stock market. For example, my pension is from IMRF, the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. They take your pension money that you donate every month, and they put it into the stock market, and that's how they make more money, to make sure that your pension plan stays solvent. But Sanders and Schumer are going to take your stock dividends, and they want to do this. Now, I just caught this today. I'm like, are you serious? But instead of me trying to explain it to you, I'm going to let Varney on Fox Business News explain it to you. So if you would be so kind, go and just listen up to what he's got, what's going on, all right? This is Varney on Fox Business News.
Move on. Senator Schumer and Sanders, they're also going after dividends. Here's the quote. Some may argue that if Congress limits stock buybacks, corporations could shift to issuing larger dividends. This is a valid concern, and we should also seriously consider policies to limit the payout of dividends, perhaps through the tax code. Come on in, market watcher Jim Awad joining me this morning in New York. What's this going to do to our viewers who may be actually living on dividends from the stock they bought?
Oh, please, is my reaction. That you just have to look at China or Japan to know that states interfering with corporations doesn't lead to the kind of productivity growth and economic miracle that we've had in this country. This will never be passed into law. It's the beginning of the presidential election. The Democrats are staking out a position on income inequality. We will have a debate on the subject, but I would have to say this is a weak start on the part of Schumer and Sanders. You cannot legislate economics. You can put incentives in, you can put rewards in, but you cannot tell people how to run their business.
I'm going to give our audience a very big number, and the number is 26,828, and that was the record close for the Dow Industrials.
Right.
Hit that last October. We've had a wonderful January, pretty good start to February. Are we going to surpass that old high for the Dow?
Well, let me tell you, there are two things have to happen. First of all, stocks are up a lot from yep. Christmas Eve. Admittedly, they were down a lot, but you don't go up in a straight line. But I think if you're going to do it, you need two things. You need the trade deal with China signed, sealed, and delivered, and you got to get over this budget negotiation and have them figure out what they're going to do in terms of border security. If both of those things happen, I think that the corporate earnings picture, even though the first quarter can be a little bit soft, the corporate earnings picture is enough to propel the market back through the old highs.
It doesn't have to be a total deal with China. Just have to have smiling faces.
It's got to be the optics. It's got to be the optics where they can hug each other. Both sides can declare victory. It'll be better than what we have, but the Chinese can't really give him all that he wants, but they could give him a down payment.
Okay, but if we get those two things,
You can't get a new high without those. You can't.
But we do if we get those.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
27,000?
Yeah. Well, no. You don't want to get. Don't get too optimistic because you've come a long way. I would say a moderate new high. You figure corporate profits are going to be up something like 6% this year, and P/E ratios should sort of be in the range of where they are. So I would say you're basically where you are in stocks where you were a year ago before they started to decline. Mm-hmm. So you could go up maybe 6%, 7% from here.
No, it'd still take us nicely high.
Yeah.
That would.
Okay. Yeah. I think
if
we get those two events, gotcha. The economics would take you there.
There you go. There you have it. All right. Now, let's get on to something else. This is really fun, too. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but you got that governor of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, not the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Oh, this is so much fun. First of all, they found a picture of him in his medical yearbook in blackface. And why, during the election, didn't the opposition research come up with this? I don't know who did the opposition research on this guy, but they should get the losing candidate should get his money back, because I'll tell you, they missed this one big time. But anyways, so now, you know, the Dems are trying to circle the wagon. Other Dems are attacking him. My take is this. According to the Kavanaugh Doctrine for the DNC and Democrats, he must resign. It's that simple. You must resign. But there's more. Yes, more. It never ends. This is fun, because now we get to watch the Democrats eat their own and scream about who could be the better socialist. Who could be the better social justice warrior? Because now, the Virginia lieutenant governor has had a sex assault charge put against him. And he says, no, 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 that came from the racist Virginia governor. Oh, yeah. So, in the last week, this is from Sundance, by the way, over at Conservative Treehouse. You'll like him. In the last week, Virginia politics went from sad to weird to flat-out bizarre. The current governor, Ralph Northam, has been outlined as a racist supporter of infanticide, and we're going to cover that in a few minutes. If you don't know about this, this will make your blood boil. It is sick, it is disgusting, and is absolutely criminal. But we'll talk about that in a minute. And everyone is calling for him to step down. So today, the current black lieutenant governor, Justin Fairfax, who would replace Northam, is credibly accused of sexual assault. Hold it right there. Now, what I want to tell you is this. Because he's been accused of sexual assault, again, according to the DNC and the Democrats, the victim must be believed. Hey, if it's good for one, it's good for the other, right? Let's get back to it. And in response, he claims the racist baby-killing governor is the source of the assault allegations. So out of Richmond, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax has emphatically denied on Monday a woman's claim that he sexually assaulted her in 2004, suggesting at one point that Governor Ralph Northam's supporters were trying to block his ascent to the governorship at a moment when Mr. Northam is besieged by demands that he resign over charges of racism. Does anybody think it's any coincidence that on the eve of potentially my being elevated, that that's when this smear comes out? Mr. Fairfax told reporters surrounding him in the rotunda of the state capitol about whether he believes Mr. Northam, a fellow Democrat, was behind the accusations coming to light. Yes, 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 yes. So what are we going to do? Oh, you know, last week we talked about Weissman and CNN and how they just magically appeared in front of Stone's residence while the FBI did a raid? Well, here we go. It's out now. Again, Sundance strikes again. Good job, buddy. So, there has been a lot of articles claiming bombshell or stunning evidence to highlight the duplicitous fraud that surrounds Robert Mueller, I call him the Mule, investigation. But an article by Gateway Pundit is exactly that, a bombshell. By the way, for transparency, I do read the Gateway Pundit. They've been doing this for a while now, and they got some good stuff. But according to their report, Gateway Pundit received a letter from lawyers representing Roger Stone that contains a documentary trail via email metadata highlighting that the Mule's lead investigator, Andrew Weissman, sent a CNN reporter a heads up in advance of the arrest of his client, Roger Stone. If true, these facts, as shared by Stone's lawyers to the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, would lay bare a series of lies told by CNN. What? CNN lied? No. Say it ain't so. So CNN explained their pre-staged presence at Mr. Stone's home and simultaneously exposed the inherent motives of the Mule investigation. This is from Grant Smith. I'm going to read the letter to you. You're going to love it. Grant Smith, attorney of law. And he sent it to the Honorable Lindsey Graham, chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Judiciary, and the Honorable Doug Collins, ranking minority member, U.S. House Committee on the Judiciary. The chronology of Roger Stone's arrest. Dear Chairman Graham and ranking minority member Collins, regarding the letter sent by your offices to FBI Director Wray following the arrest of Roger Stone, Mr. Stone has directed me to provide the detailed chronology of his arrest outlined below. It should be noted that CNN apparently received a copy of Mr. Stone's indictment prior to its filing and its unsealing. This is substantiated by the metadata contained within the copy of the indictment that was sent to me by a reporter contemporaneous with Mr. Stone's arrest. Curiously, the copy sent to me did not contain the PACER filing notations in its header. It would be of great public interest to understand how that occurred. So the following are the early morning events of January 25th, 2019. At 4:58 a.m., CNN film crew arrives in front of the Stone residence in an SUV with two occupants. At 6:04 a.m., the FBI arrives at the Stone residence to commence their operation. Contemporaneously, the CNN photojournalist emerged from their vehicle, parked directly across the street from the Stone residence, and began filming the FBI activities. At 6:05 a.m., the FBI surrounds the Stone home and prepare to announce themselves and take Mr. Stone into custody. 6:05 a.m., the FBI knocks on the front door of the residence. 6:06, Mr. Stone opens the door and is arrested outside his residence. CNN, at the instruction of the FBI, moves their vehicle. At 6:11 a.m., I received a call from CNN political correspondent Sarah Murray informing me that Mr. Stone has been arrested. At 6:14 a.m., I call Mrs. Stone and she confirms the CNN report. At 6:22 a.m., I received a link from CNN correspondent Sarah Murray to the DOJ website where the indictment is posted. Now, in parentheses, it says it is important to note that the current copy posted there has the PACER filing confirmation in the header of each page, indicating a filing date of 1/24/2019. The copy that currently appears on the DOJ website is now different from PACER document entry number 1, as the one originally in the PACER was replaced with a scan of the original with signatures and stamps. Again, at 6:22, I received via text message from Sarah Murray of CNN what appears to be a draft copy of the indictment, as it has no PACER filing notations in the header. This makes the document provided to me different from the copy currently on the DOJ website and would appear to be prior in time to the filing and the unsealing. It is unknown how CNN had obtained a copy of a sealed indictment without a PACER filing header. Additionally, the metadata of the document sent to me, also attached, indicates that the author was AAW and that it was created and modified on January 23, 2019 at 11:04 p.m. using Acrobat PDF Maker for Word a full day before it was filed with the court under seal. As Mr. Stone has repeatedly stated in the days since his arrest, the FBI agents who took him into custody processed him at the Miami field office and searched his home were consummate professionals and were merely executing orders provided to them by their chain of command. If you need additional information, please do not hesitate to call me. Respectfully submitted, Grant Smith. Wow. So Mr. Weissman, unscrupulous political lawfare tactics, has been known for quite some time. However, this could be the most jaw-dropping exhibition of corrupt DOJ scheme to date. So, what do you think? What do you think? You know, Weissman is the one who told Sally Yates that he was so proud of her and in awe. And he says, thank you so much, and all my deepest respects, Andrew Weissman. He sent that to Sally Yates for her refusal to act upon a directive by President Donald Trump. Yes, it seems Mr. Weissman has some explaining to do. But will he? I don't know. I just don't know. Now, I told you we're going to talk about Northam infanticide. We're going to do that, I think. Should we? All right, one more before we get to that. This will get you going. This will drive you nuts. Again, Sundance strikes again. Eric Jamal Hendricks, 38, of Charlotte, North Carolina, was sentenced to 15 years in prison for attempting to provide material support to the Islamic State. You see, hold it here. Attempting. So let me get this straight. Because he attempted to do it and he failed at it, he should get less time? I don't think so. I don't think there should be an attempting. Attempting anything. Was it attempted theft? Attempted murder? Whatever. Just because you're a failure at what you're trying to do does not mean you should get less time. But anyways, that's just my opinion. Last year, a jury in Akron, Ohio, convicted Hendricks after he recruited a guy named Amr al-Ghazi to carry out a terrorist attack in the U.S. Hendricks was sentenced today. At Hendricks' instruction, another terrorist named al-Ghazi attempted to purchase an AK-47 to carry out an attack. Al-Ghazi was stopped by undercover federal law enforcement after it was discovered that he had pledged allegiance to ISIS and social media and made statements expressing interest in conducting attacks in the U.S. Now, Hendricks had contacted al-Ghazi over social media to recruit him in the spring of 2015. Hendricks allegedly told al-Ghazi that he, quote-unquote, needed people and wanted to meet in person, that there were several, quote-unquote, brothers located in Texas and Mexico that he was attempting to get brothers to meet face-to-face, and that he wanted to get brothers to train together, according to court documents and trial testimony. So Hendricks was convicted in his role in inspiring, aiding, plotting, and facilitating the foiled ISIS attack. However, when it came to sentencing, this is what's going to... Try not to put your cars in the ditch. Keep your trucks in their lane. Do not go into the ditch when I tell you this. However, when it came to sentencing, U.S. District Judge John Adams noted the actions Hendricks was convicted of performing, but also noted that Hendricks' actions in court were respectful and that he carried himself with a certain quiet dignity. So the judge reduced Hendricks' sentence from 30 years in prison to 15 years for being nice in court. Are you kidding me? No! Sounds like Judge John Adams needs to get a spine. Either that or turn in his man card. Maybe both. Oh, and you know what? Forget it. Forget turning his man card. I'm suspending Judge John Adams' man card immediately. Immediately. Your man card is suspended. Move on. Oh, man, that just drives me bonkers. Drives me absolutely crazy. All right. Judge Jeanine, you ever catch her on the weekends on Fox News? This is her opening statement. Now, and if you're not, you know what, I'll just play it. Need you to listen to it. It's about 7 minutes. I think you'll find it to be interesting. Again, try not to put your vehicles, if you're driving, into the ditch, because you're going to be screaming in your car. But if you got kids or family there, try not to scream too loud. You'll scare them. Everyone else, we don't care. All right, here we go. This is Justice with Judge Jeanine.
What I'm about to tell you is extremely important to me. It represents the worst cultural shift that I've witnessed in this country. And it matters not if you're pro-choice, pro-life, or an agnostic. You must take notice. I'm talking about the legalization of infanticide, or to put it in layman's terms, absolution, for the intentional killing of full-term babies. Babies born alive who were then murdered or allowed to die on the mother's say-so. The procedure is described by Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, a pediatric neurologist, no less, who coldly describes and defends the killing of babies after they are born.
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Now, he didn't say how, but the meaning is clear. If the mother wants the baby dead, the baby dies. By way of motivation, consider this. Northam received over $2 million from Planned Parenthood. You remember Planned Parenthood in those undercover films where the sale of baby parts is discussed? And you can now add New York State. They now allow third-term abortions where a baby can be delivered full-term, born alive, and then allowed to die or worse. Governor Andrew Cuomo, for the sake of full disclosure, I ran against him for Attorney General in New York State in 2006, openly celebrated this government-sanctioned infanticide by lighting up New York's World Trade Center in pink. You celebrate barbaric homicides where an entire class of helpless human beings born alive are denied equal protection under the Constitution and denied life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? In fact, there's no requirement that the health of the mother even be at risk. You celebrate that innocent, helpless babies enjoy less protection by the lawless left than endangered species like turtles or caterpillars? You celebrate lethal violence against a baby after it's born? Shame on you! What would your father, Governor Mario Cuomo, say if he were alive? And don't give me this hogwash that maybe the baby's deformed. There are so many tests, sonograms, amniocentesis, DNA screening, and so much more long before the 38th week. But you would celebrate the ideological justification to take the lives of innocent human beings with no requirement other than the health of the mother, which isn't even defined. It undermines human dignity. But there are already, in addition to New York, six states and the District of Columbia that allow these barbaric procedures. Now, I've actually prosecuted infanticide cases where infants are killed intentionally. It's a homicide, folks, not an abortion. Governor Cuomo, are you concerned that the homicide statute remains on the books in New York State and a person is defined as a baby born and born alive, that a prosecutor under Article 125 of New York's penal law can still prosecute a doctor or an attendant for killing a baby? That statute is still on the books, Governor. I don't think you and your left-loving cronies thought that one through. And the irony is, we actually have, get this, no kill cities where animals will not be euthanized even if they're not adopted. And I've actually prosecuted animal cruelty cases too, where animals are intentionally killed and they can get a maximum of 2 years in jail. So babies carried in the mother's womb for 9 months and then killed, that's not criminal? And where is the Catholic Church on this? We've got a pope who's more worried about climate change and equal pay for women than attending to his own flock in the Middle East where genocide against Christians occurs. The Catholic Church has lost enough credibility in the last few years for them to not step up in every pulpit, in every church in this nation, and implore their congregants to recognize the evil being committed. If they don't do this, then they're part of the problem. Tomorrow's Sunday. Listen closely to what your priest says. Hopefully, he will talk about the evil that is occurring under the law across this country. But back to the dingbat governor, Dr. Mengele himself, who tried to justify an unjustifiable infanticide. We now find out that in his medical school yearbook, he thought it was funny to either dress as a Ku Klux Klansman or in blackface. His first response when outed, he called it clearly racist and offensive, and said, "I am deeply sorry for the decision I made to appear as I did in this photo." Well, then Dr. Mengele sleeps on it and decides today, wait, it's really not me.
It is definitely not me. I can tell by looking at it.
Are you stupid? Politics 101. If you apologize for something that everyone considers outrageous, and anyone else, by the way, would lose their job over it, then you get up the next day and say, it wasn't me. You either fire your political consultant or change your meds. Are you schizo too? Doc, now you know someone's gonna go out and find your medical school pals who will admit that you were known by a racist nickname so vile I can't repeat it or put it on the screen. And they will be asked if you signed their yearbook. And I'm afraid to think how or where you signed, or whether you added on what is already outrageous, overt racism. And just so my viewers get a gist of who you are, you admit now that you've dressed in blackface before, so you could moonwalk like Michael Jackson.
You said that the competition in San Antonio was a dance competition?
Yes.
And it was that you danced the moonwalk?
That's right.
Are you still able to moonwalk?
Inappropriate circumstances.
My wife says inappropriate circumstances.
No, Ralph, it's perfectly appropriate for you to do the right thing and moonwalk your butt right out of the governor's mansion. Or better yet, do us all a favor and just beat it. And that's my open.
There you go. I thought Judge Jeanine pretty much says what we all think. So we're at the point where it is legal. If you, gosh, I hate to ask you. I described it last week what the partial birth abortion is. It's pathetic. It's sad. And when you read about it, what exactly it is, it will bring tears to your eyes. You don't have to be a parent to have the tears in your eyes. Because when you read about what's involved in it, it breaks your heart. It breaks your spirit. And you know without a doubt that it's wrong. And if you don't know what's wrong, then your moral compass is broken and you need to disappear. All right. In the meantime, Mark Levin has some stuff to say about this. Found this on CNS News. You know, and according to Mark Levin, abortion, infanticide are not modern. This is barbaric to the extreme, and it is. Look, I don't want to be the one to have to bring this up, but we have to talk about it. This has to be exposed for what it is. This is from CNS News. This is Mark Levin. I want you just to listen to it. It's about 4.5 minutes.
He sits there. He signs this infanticide law. People are applauding. This is a woman's choice. What kind of a woman chooses to kill her baby after the baby's born? I'm sorry. There are no exceptions for that. None. What kind of a woman, doctor, provider, agrees to kill a baby in the third term? Look, I'm against abortion. But I'm even talking about these cases which are really not debatable under any circumstances. And you know how I know that? Because the laws are written so broadly and the language is so ambiguous. Even the authors of the laws know it. They don't write these laws to protect women who are in horrific states of potential death and so forth. They write these laws for choice. That's what they say. It's choice. Future generations are going to look back on this generation with complete and utter contempt. You think we're modern? We're not modern. This is barbaric to the extreme. You know, we lose our parents. We lose our parents. It's a horrific thing. None of us are going to escape this planet alive. None of us. Just a matter of when and how. But to actually have a hand in the murder of an innocent baby human being. And every religious institution in this country doesn't rise up. Every civil rights institution in this country doesn't rise up. Every political party in this country doesn't rise up. Every person in this country won't rise up. It's just appalling. And I want to say one other thing. You on the Supreme Court, you did this. You did this. You started this. Just like the Dred Scott decision, the Roe versus Wade decision. They say keep government out of the bedroom. Well, what do you think the Supreme Court did? It went right into the bedroom. What do you think Obamacare does? It goes right into the bedroom. What do you think Medicare and Medicaid do? They go right into the bedroom. What do you think Medicare for All will do? Go right into the bedroom. Lots of things that go on in bedrooms, ladies and gentlemen, that are appalling, immoral, and illegal. Incest, rape. Doesn't matter if it's done in the bedroom or somewhere else. We used to believe in right and wrong, good and evil, moral and immoral. Many of us still do.
This is pure evil. This is evil. So, and don't get me wrong. Hey, look, I like animals. I like all the animals. And yet, if they're able to sit there and pass laws that protect animals from being euthanized, but you are willing to put the animals above a human being, what is wrong with you? I just can't. I'm absolutely frustrated by it. All right. Now we know what's going on. In case you missed it, now you're caught up. Now, from Front Page Magazine, we have a new low in media lies from the Miami Herald. From the Miami Herald. The Herald's Sarah Blakesky is an egregious example of how much journalism has degenerated. Robert Spencer did a great job on this. It's commonplace and universal. If you're a dissident from the leftist agenda, you're not going to get fair, accurate, honest treatment from the establishment media reporters. But in this hit piece on Hallandale Beach Commissioner Annabel Lee Mataab, who called Muslim Representative Rashida Tlaib a Hamas-loving anti-Semite who might become a martyr and blow up Capitol Hill, Sarah Blaisky of the Miami Herald hits a new low even for leftist journalists, whose integrity is already a notch below that of child molesters and provides a textbook example of how those journalists distort the facts, libel people, and lie outright in order to manipulate the public into believing what they want them to believe. So let's start with the title. Strange Bedfellows, How a South Florida Democrat Became the Darling of the Alt-Right, which claims that Lima Taub has become the darling of the alt-right. Alt-right is the latest media term that essentially means people you should hate and fear. When leftists get more specific about what it means, they generally say that it refers to people who are white supremacists, racists, neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, and the like. Those terms don't remotely apply to Annabelle Lima Taub, but Sarah Blaisky wants you to think they do, and in smearing Lima Taub and her supporters, Blaisky is just getting started. A wall of half a dozen men closed ranks around Rasha Mubarak, leering at the young Palestinian-American woman who filmed them on her phone. They shoved Make America Great Again caps in her face and waved signs inscribed with anti-Muslim messages and spewed insults. Animal, anti-Semite, woman hater, terrorist. My initial reaction was that bigotry is real in South Florida, said Mubarak, who told the Miami Herald she was afraid the men would become physically violent. It was a little overwhelming and scary. Where's the video? If Rasha Mubarak was filming these people who shoved MAGA hats in her face, waved signs inscribed with anti-Muslim messages, and called her animal, anti-Semite, woman-hater, and terrorist, where is the video? Sarah Blaisky has seven hyperlinks in this article. Why didn't she link to this video? If this really happened, did no one else film it? The Miami Herald published a video of this rally that is designed to make the rally-goers look as bad as they possibly can. But it doesn't show anyone shoving caps in anyone's face or any anti-Muslim messages on signs or anyone calling any poor Muslima unkind names. Why hasn't Blaisky produced the video of this incident? Does it even exist? Did any of this happen at all? Mubarak's antagonists were part of a group gathered outside Hallandale Beach City Hall on January 23rd in a rally that to some was intended to be a defense of Israel against a growing boycott movement. It became a platform for anti-Muslim hate. Setting that tone and mixed into the crowd were self-described Islamophobes, white nationalists, sympathizers of the Ku Klux Klan, and members of alt-right factions who had come to support in an unlikely new ally, Hallandale Beach Commissioner Annabelle Lima Taub, known until recent weeks as an outspoken feminist and Democrat. Islamophobe is a propaganda neologism designed to intimidate people into thinking it wrong to oppose jihad terror and Sharia oppression. Those who describe themselves as such are mocking those who think jihad terror is not a threat, and the stigmatizing and demonizing by people such as Sarah Blaisky of those who call attention to that threat. Abdur Rahman Muhammad, himself a Muslim, wrote in the New York Daily News in 2010, quote, "This loathsome term is nothing more than a thought-terminating cliché conceived in the bowels of Muslim think tanks for the purpose of beating down critics," end quote. And he is right. Responsible journalists shouldn't be using manipulative propaganda terms, but Sarah Blaisky loves them. Not only do we get alt-right and Islamophobe, but she claims that white nationalists and sympathizers of the Ku Klux Klan were present at this rally. That may be. But Blaisky offers no evidence, no quotes, nothing to support her claim. She just wants you to associate Annabelle Lima Taub and her opposition to Rashida Tlaib and her anti-Semitism with hatred, bigotry, and racism. There is no connection between opposition to jihad terror and Sharia oppression and white nationalism, the KKK and the like, but Blaisky here takes a page from the Southern Poverty Law Center's book and lumps them all together. This is how propaganda works. Repeat the big lie often enough, and people believe it. And indeed, many people today take for granted the idea that opposing the likes of Rashida Tlaib and Hamas makes one hateful. When anyone who steps back and considers the situation for a nanosecond will see that it is actually Tlaib who is the hateful one. Not anymore. The day of the rally, Lima Taub was facing official censure from colleagues on the city commission for a viral Facebook post in which she called Rashida Tlaib, a Muslim congresswoman from Michigan, a Hamas-loving anti-Semite who might, become a martyr, and blow up Capitol Hill. The post was denounced as hate speech by numerous Muslim and Jewish human rights organizations, but Lima Taib remained unapologetic. Lost in the fracas here is the fact that Taib really is demonstrably an anti-Semite who is friendly with several open supporters of jihad terror. That she might blow up Capitol Hill is hyperbole, but of course Sarah Blakeslee never for a moment considers the possibility that Annabelle Lima Taib may actually be onto something, or that Rashida Tlaib may actually be an anti-Semite who is sympathetic to jihad terror groups and jihadis themselves. And no establishment media journalist would dare ask Tlaib herself for a statement on her obvious closeness to anti-Semites and supporters of the jihad against Israel. Establishment media journalists only ask tough questions to those who dissent from the leftist agenda, not to those who support that agenda. Lima Taib has repeatedly denied that she is Islamophobic or anti-Muslim, though she wrote that Islam was a religion hijacked by terrorists. It's now Islamophobic and anti-Muslim to note that Islam has been hijacked by terrorists. 34,516 deadly jihad terror attacks worldwide since 9/11, and Sarah Blakeslee thinks it's morally wrong to say that Islam has been hijacked by terrorists. She also maintains it's reasonable to believe a Muslim congresswoman who supports an Israeli boycott might be a terrorist. No quote here. So we don't know what Lima Taib actually said. Would Blakeslee deny that it's reasonable to believe that a Muslim congresswoman who supports an Israeli boycott is sympathetic to terrorists who targets Israelis? Because that's clearly true of Rashida Tlaib. And recently, she gave the Center on American-Islamic Relations two middle fingers on a Facebook Live video calling the Muslim Advocacy and Human Rights Group a terrorist organization. The U.S. State Department has not designated the group a terrorist organization, nor has it designated a hate group. Indeed. But how trustworthy is the U.S. State Department on such questions? One thing we have learned since Trump became president is that the State Department and other government agencies are deeply politicized and hardly the dispassionate, impartial judges that Americans in the past took them for granted as being. And the United Arab Emirates has declared CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, to be a terrorist organization. There are plenty of reasons for doing so. CARE is an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case, so named by the Justice Department. CARE officials have repeatedly refused to denounce Hamas and Hezbollah as terrorist groups. Several former CARE officials have been convicted on various crimes related to jihad terror. CARE's co-founder and longtime board chairman, Omar Ahmad, as well as its chief spokesman, Ibrahim Hooper, have made Islamic supremacist statements about how Islamic law should be imposed in the U.S. Ahmed denies this, but the original reporter stands by her story. CARE chapters frequently distribute pamphlets telling Muslims not to cooperate with law enforcement. CARE has opposed virtually every anti-terror measure that has been proposed or implemented and has been declared a terror organization by the United Arab Emirates. CARE's Hussam Ailush in 2017 called for the overthrow of the U.S. government. And as for CARE not being a designated hate group, the primary organization that designates hate groups, the Southern Poverty Law Center, uses its hate group designation as a political weapon to smear and demonize groups that dissent from the leftist line. This has become so obvious that even the Washington Post has noticed. The SPLC doesn't list any pro-jihad or Islamic supremacist groups as hate groups. Her actions speak loud and clear. Annabelle Taib is a bigot, said Commissioner Michelle Lazzaro, who sponsored the item to censor Lima Taib for hate speech. She says she's not anti-Muslim while promoting bigoted stereotypes about Muslims. Remember, Lima Taib only spoke about Rashida Tlaib, about whom there is a great deal of reason to be suspicious. But now Lima Taib is accused of promoting bigoted stereotypes about Muslims, and Sarah Blakeslee passes this on as if it were an accurate observation. Taking a page from the playbook of the far right, the Israeli-born politician labeled her critics, even the Jewish ones like Lazzaro, anti-Semitic, enemies of the First Amendment, and terrorist sympathizers. Far right, Blaisky now throws in yet another smear phrase that signifies that she wants her readers not to sympathize with Lima Taub or her supporters. By digging in and defending her statements, Lima Taub alienated many of her mainstream supporters nearly overnight. But she also attracted a new group of allies who cheered her on from the internet chat rooms and anti-Muslim blogs. Some of them attended the rally at City Hall on January 23rd. Anti-Muslim media propaganda term meaning opposed to jihad, terror, and Sharia oppression. Opposing such things no more makes one anti-Muslim than opposing Nazism made one anti-German. We are not going to relinquish our country to terrorists, said Janet Kahlberg, who was one of the first Lima Taub supporters to arrive at the rally. There is no place in Congress for someone who takes an oath on the Quran. Does Sarah Blaisky know what's in the Quran? Is she familiar with its calls to warfare against unbelievers, permission to lie to those unbelievers, or with its anti-Semitism and misogyny? Almost certainly not. She just knows this. Those who oppose taking an oath in the Quran are bigoted and bad. Why does she think this? Because it has been repeated so often among her peers. Once again, that's how propaganda works. Whether intentional or not, Lima Taub's call for a solidarity rally to defend her words opened Hallandale Beach to an anti-Islam agenda that has been building momentum nationally. So, from Democrat to Nikon, before Lima Taub became the darling of xenophobes and nationalists, she is one of South Florida's most notorious pull-no-punches feminists. Xenophobes and nationalists, two more smear terms. Remember, we're talking about someone who criticized a congresswoman who has demonstrable ties to jihad terror sympathizers and anti-Semites. Just doing that has gotten Lima Taub, in this article alone, called and or associated with the alt-right, the far-right, Islamophobes, white nationalists, sympathizers of the Ku Klux Klan, people who are anti-Muslim, xenophobes, and nationalists. Sarah Blaisky is a veritable poster child for the moral inversion and propagandistic dishonesty of the establishment media. The first-term commissioner from Hallandale Beach made national headlines last August when she publicly denounced former Mayor Keith London for his comments during an official budget hearing in which he accused the commissioner of profiting from bleaching her sphincter. She hashtagged her Facebook takedown of London, hashtag me too, and encouraged other women to come forward. Now, if Lima Taub were on the left, the likes of Sarah Blaisky would be castigating London for making this weird and out-of-context charge in the middle of a budget hearing. But because Blaisky hates Lima Taub, any innuendo, any dirt, any smear will do, despite having nothing to do with the issue at hand. On paper, at least from her Facebook post, Lima Taub seemed perfect for the South Florida city tucked into Florida's bluest county. She was a Democrat, though her commission seat is nonpartisan. A vegan, a dedicated animal rights activist, pro-union, a supporter of the Parkland students' calls for gun control, a crusader for justice. She called herself corruption's toughest rival in Hallandale Beach. Now we see why Blaisky hates Lima Taub for such burning intensity after being a reliably orthodox adherent of Blaisky's secular religion of leftism, globalism, socialism, and the like. Lima Taub has become a heretic, and so she must be stoned to death with all the rhetorical stones Blaisky can manage to throw at her. Then came her 2019 reinvention. Just days into the new year, she produced a quick succession of Facebook posts echoing the language of designated anti-Muslim hate groups. Amid backlash, she made an online announcement that she had left the Democratic over Tlaib support for an Israel boycott. Designated anti-Muslim hate groups? Designated by whom? Blaisky doesn't say. Perhaps she is unaware that if she names the SPLC, she'll be destroying her own credibility. For those who know her, however, the shift was not as drastic as it might seem. I gotta take a breath here. So, Commissioner Taub is not a Democrat in substance, never has been, said Lazaro, who had worked with Lima Taub on animal rights campaigns for years and helped her run the Hallandale Beach Commission in 2016 before the two had a falling out. She changed her party affiliation before last year's election so that she could deceive voters at the polls by showing them a registration card with a D on it. So the heretic has been a deceiver all along. She's a witch. Burn her! Burn her! According to her Broward voter registration card, Lima Taub changed from non-party affiliated to Democrat in August 2018. She switched her registration again, this time to Republican on January 23rd, the day of the rally at the Hallandale Beach City Hall. Lima Taub's transition didn't stop at Republican. Instead, she moved further right. On Facebook, she declared herself a neoconservative, consummating the transition by launching a very public friendship with Laura Loomer, an alt-right provocateur. By the way, I do like Laura Loomer, who denounces both feminism and the Me Too movement as being anti-white male. Proud of the label Islamophobe, Loomer clarified that she sees her fear of Islam as rational. She calls Islam the biggest threat to Western society. In reality, most terrorist attacks in America are carried out by national extremists. In reality, this claim, as common as it is based on a rigged study that counted the casualties from terror attacks by supposed right-wing extremists and by jihadis. But it started the count on September 12, 2001, thus massively skewing the data and ignored failed plots as well as the fact that jihad terror is an international movement, while right-wing extremism is not. The term alt-right, first coined by neo-Nazi Richard Spencer to describe his brand of white nationalism, has expanded in common vernacular to describe a non-homogeneous, dizzying array of far-right ideologies and warring factions. Alt-right groups range from full-blown white supremacists to watered-down, pro-Israel versions of the ideology that Loomer promotes, sometimes called the alt-light. I give Blaisky credit for not making the common establishment media mistake of confusing the Nazi Richard Spencer with me. But note that for her definition of alt-right boils down to anything she doesn't like and wants to tar with the smear term. This faction, which Loomer described as socially liberal, is tolerant of gay, albeit mostly white, men, for example, but still deeply xenophobic and nationalistic. Note how Blaisky keeps trying to smear Lima Taub as a racist. Remember, all for criticizing an anti-Semitic congresswoman. As Lima Taub came under fire in national headlines for anti-Muslim comments, various alt-right publications and blog sites came to her defense. Some claimed the press had blown the story out of proportion and had conspired with Lazaro to discredit Lima Taub out of a personal vendetta. The major proponents of this counter-narrative include Halsey News, an organization founded by a woman who claims responsibility for starting the infamous Pizzagate rumors, according to the Miami New Times. It was also pushed by the Geller Report, a publication founded by extremist and anti-Muslim activist Pamela Geller. Lima Taub called the former good reporting and thanked Geller by name on Facebook for the positive press. Calling Pamela Geller an extremist is her most vicious smear of all. Extremism became, during the Obama administration, the U.S. government's official euphemism for jihad terrorism, and the word became essentially synonymous with terrorist. To call Pamela Geller an extremist is to claim that opposing jihad terror is equivalent to promoting jihad terror. It also paints a massive target on Pamela Geller's head by implying that she is a plotter of violence or something equally sinister, and to call her anti-Muslim suggests what she opposes: jihad violence, Islamic anti-Semitism, and misogyny, etc., is endorsed by every Muslim, which makes Sarah Blaisky more anti-Muslim than Pamela Geller could ever be. According to the SPLC, in recent years, the most influential anti-Muslim hate groups named ACT for America and the think tank Center for Security Policy have sought to develop closer relationships with elected officials both at the state and local levels. Recently, on her public Rogue Commissioner Facebook page, Lima Taub posted a video by Brigitte Gabriel, founder of anti-Muslim hate group ACT for America, with a comment, "Preach on." The video slammed two Muslim congresswomen, calling them anti-American. At least Blaisky knows the names the SPLC, without, of course, any hint of that cynical and dishonest organization's massive and growing credibility problem. By the night of the January 23rd Commission hearing, Lima Taub was familiar enough with this new world of conspiracy theorists and extremists that she picked Loomer out of the crowd, having never met her before in person, and excitedly waved the woman forward to give her a hug. "We support you," Loomer said. Add conspiracy theorists to the list of Blaisky's smear terms. As she goes on and on, leaping into the SPLC's paranoid fantasies about hate groups being on the rise, which means you need the SPLC, you see, so send money, lots of money. Even the David Horowitz Freedom Center's front page magazine, a stolid journal of conservative opinion, comes into Blaisky's crosshairs. Filming the event was Joe Kaufman, founder of Care Watch, an organization dedicated to disparaging the Muslim advocacy group, and frequent contributor Front Page Mag, a far-right extremist publication founded by David Horowitz. Lima Taub supporters outnumbered her critics 5-1 at City Hall. And that explains why Blasky saw the need to resort to the supreme level of viciousness she displays in this hit piece. If the Miami Herald were remotely sane, honest, or committed to actual journalism, it would retract Sarah Blasky's article, apologize to the Amitav, and fire Blasky. But the world of establishment media journalism is so deranged today and so thoroughly given over to leftist propaganda that if Blasky were actually fired, which will never happen, she will likely get immediately snapped up by the New York Times, the Washington Post, or CNN. There you go. And that's how bad it is. We're running out of time. I got a little less than 4 minutes. But I know what you want. I know what you want. And we're going to do it right now. Yes, it's time for the Breitbart Social Justice Warriors. What are they up to this week? Well, we got Colin Kaepernick. Thanks, Rihanna, for boycotting the Super Bowl. You want to know why Colin Kaepernick hasn't been picked up as a quarterback for a professional team? He cannot read defenses. That's why he's running all the time. It's got nothing to do with his color of his skin or his anything else. It has to do with the fact he can't do the job. He cannot read a defense. That's why the guy's running all the time. Think about it. That's why. Meanwhile, never mind. I'm not going to go into it anymore. A New Zealand lecturer says surfers need to redistribute quality waves. Oh, here's a good one. You'll like this one. Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon ignore the Northam controversy after previously appearing in blackface. What? Say it ain't so. Oh, yeah. I'll see. What else we got here? So it looks like Northam's abortion comments prompted classmate to tip off the photo. The NFL suffers worst ratings in Super Bowl history. Well, they should. It was a dog of a game. WAPO. That's Jeff Bezos, by the way, owns it. Spends $5.2 million on a vanity ad in the wake of 1,200 media layoffs. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Bucknell University will host an anti-Semite who called Jews sleazy thieves. That's true. That's what he said. Bucknell University is hosting a controversial activist this week who has compared Jewish people to sleazy thieves. The American Bar Association rejects plan to toughen law school standards. Yeah, because, you know, that's what this country needs. That's what this world needs. More lawyers. Student claims National Honor Society rejected him from pro-Trump views. The National Honor Society rejected New Jersey High School due to a support of President Donald Trump, according to the student. Oh, my, oh, my. We've got many time for a couple more. YouTube explores censorship of dislikes after a rewind humiliation. YouTube is considering removing or eliminating its users' ability to use the dislike button to indicate their distaste for content after one of the platform's own official videos, the infamous Rewind 2018 Angle Recap, became the most disliked YouTube video in history. Does it ever end with these people? No, it does not. It does not. Oh, I want to think of... Thank you for the new supporters. Thank you for throwing in your couple bucks for the month. I appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You'll be hearing from me later. Make sure you listen in to other... We got... RedStateUnderground.com. Check it out. RedStateUnderground.com. You'll like it. It's pretty good stuff. All right. I got less than a minute here. I want to thank you all for listening and passing the word. We're getting more and more people. Pass the word along and get more and more people. Thank you, KYAH, for having us as part of your, shall we say, stable of shows. Yes. Thanks. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. Mark Boyle appreciates it. Many others as well. Donald Lowry, he appreciates it. I'm John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief saying thank you for listening. And we're going to get back to you again next week after the State of the Union hype all dies down, we can all get a chance to digest it. Till then, I'm John Jeffress saying thank you again for listening, and don't be afraid, you're not alone.